Now, time for our Friday interview. It's with CJ. I'm not going to pronounce his last name because I get it wrong every time. De Moye, is it? Who's better known for his role on Eggheads. He's been making headlines after the release of his autobiography, in which he revealed fears he may have killed a man while he was living on the streets of Amsterdam. I've been speaking to him, and he told me about the incident.
What happened was I was making a phone call in central Amsterdam while I was still homeless, and a guy came up behind me with a knife. And you turn around, you see somebody there hemming you into a phone box with a weapon, and you get nervous, and I acted in self-defense. I didn't know what he was going to do. I punched him and disarmed him and threw him into the canal. I don't know what happened to him, but I did what I had to do. He was armed and I was trapped. What was I supposed to do?
Why did you throw him into the canal?
It was just a reaction. I wasn't thinking. When somebody attacks you, you act in self-defense. I had to protect myself. I didn't know if he was going to attack me again. I did what I thought was right at the time.
And you said, I fully suspect I killed him.
I'm not absolutely sure those were the words I used. At the time, I think I just said I feared I killed him, or I worried I killed him.
Okay. Well, are you worried?
Of course I am, yeah. I mean, the people ask me or have criticised me why I put this whole thing in the book in the first place. And I say, look, there was no point writing an autobiography if I wasn't going to be completely honest. I've got to put in the bad stuff as well as the good stuff. So I put this incident in because it shows me in a very bad light, and I fully accept that. But if I did something wrong, then I've got to pay for it. And I am very worried about it, but I have to be completely honest.
Well, have the police been in touch?
Not as yet, but I believe they are looking into the matter, especially the Dutch authorities.
So you could be arrested?
If it goes to any degree, that is, of course, always a possibility. But if I wasn't prepared for that, then I wouldn't have put the incident in. I could have, of course, just pretended it didn't happen or put it in a much different light, say he came at me very aggressively and there were other people with him. But as I say, I just wanted to be completely honest. It's something I've been thinking about for a long time.
Is it on your conscience?
Of course. And if it wasn't, I wouldn't be worried about it and I would just dismiss it. Oh, he was a guy, he came up with my knife, he got what he deserved. Well, no, that's not the way I view it. I acted in self-defense, of course, but it's been something that I've been worried about and has been preying on my mind for a long time.
In what way preying on your mind?
Well, I've never used violence. I don't like using violence. I don't understand it. I'm very timid and very passive. Yes, I'm pretty fit and pretty strong, and I can defend myself if necessary, but I don't like the use of aggression. And he came at me with a weapon. And I acted in a way I've never done previously and haven't done since. I'm not going to say, I regret it, but it is something I have worried about and have thought about a lot over the years. I wouldn't do it again, but this is the one time I did do it. And of course, the thought of it and the memory of it hasn't left me.
How hard did you punch him?
I was in the phone box, I turned round to my left, saw the knife immediately in his right hand, and I just punched him in the face with my right fist.
I guess, you know, some people might wonder if you regret not phoning the authorities there and then, phoning for help for him.
There was that, of course, but I was very scared. I had no idea what I was doing, and the whole thing is, I'm not really a blur, but I was just very confused and very disoriented, because here I was. I mean, I had been sleeping rough for nearly 2 years, and I wasn't really thinking properly. I was in absolute shock at what just happened, and I just sort of walked away in a daze.
I guess it is slightly bizarre, CJ, that you're bringing focus, hassle, possible criminal proceedings upon yourself.
Yes, and this is a point that people have raised, but again, I have to be completely honest. I could write an autobiography that showed me in an absolute glowing light. Here I am, I was a victim, I had a terrible childhood, oh, woe is me, and look what I've done out of it. Aren't I lucky, aren't I special? But I'm not. I have my flaws, I've been duped in the past sometimes, And I wanted to be completely honest. There's no point sugarcoating something. There's no point looking at it through rose-tinted glasses. I wanted to be straightforward and say, look, I've made mistakes. This is what I've done.
The other story that's been in the papers about you is why you believe you were turned down for Strictly.
Yeah.
Are the headlines right?
Again, you've got to treat these things maybe with a little pinch of salt and read between the lines. But what the story effectively says is true. My name was put forward to Strictly quite some time ago with the precondition that I danced with a male partner, simply because I thought it was time that Strictly Come Dancing considered this as an option. I was told at the end of July that I was no longer being considered, which was disappointing, I have to say. I was really hoping they'd go for it. But then some of the other stories that have since come out have been a little strange. I mean, Strictly saying that they have no plans for same-sex couples because it's a family show. I find that sits very uncomfortably with me, and a lot of people have commented that's a very strange choice of words.
What do you read into that?
I think it's a very strange choice of phrasing from the press office. Maybe I can't imagine the BBC want to define what marriage is, but what a traditional family should be. But
well, there's a clear inference, isn't there? There is an inference that two people who are gay together can't be in a family show. That's the inference from that press statement.
That certainly would be the most likely reading of it, and I can't deny that's the reading I took from it.
Well, what does that say to you?
Well, it's not a great advert for inclusivity, is it?
You say that you like to say it as it is, and warts and all. You're dancing around this. What does it say to you?
I'm trying to be diplomatic, shall we say, but to me, it smacks of hypocrisy. Here we are, we've got probably the most popular show in Britain today, and they're actually trying to say, look, we're not going to do same-sex couples, so stop asking us about it.
Well, here's what the BBC have said in relation to this. They've said to avoid any misinterpretation, the reference to family show, meaning all kinds of families, was only ever intended to describe the kind of show Strictly is. On mixed couples, the BBC say Strictly Come Dancing has chosen the traditional format of mixed-sex couples. At the moment, we have no plans to introduce same-sex couples in the competition. CJ's made reference about his terrible childhood in the extract you've just heard. I asked him more about it.
Yeah, I mean, my childhood was not what you'd expect. I mean, so many people accuse me of being posh or privileged, but my childhood was uncomfortable, to say the least, and it was abusive, was very violent, was very aggressive, homophobic. I was brought up in a very racist environment, and it resulted in the fact that just after my 17th birthday, I had to get out, and I spent the next 3 years sleeping rough.
So what did your parents, your mum and dad, what did they do to you?
It was from a very early age telling me I wasn't wanted, I wasn't loved, I was a nasty piece of work.
From how young?
The earliest I can remember, 3 or 4.
Why would they do that?
Maybe that's what they felt. Maybe that's what was the truth. I certainly was a very inconvenient burden, the image I got. And I remember violence and abuse from a very early age.
And they would just say this out loud to you?
Yes. They would say it to my face, to me.
And as a young child,
yes,
what would that do to you?
Well, from a very early age, I was very loath to trust anyone. I found it very difficult to make friends. I mean, I didn't really have any friends until I was in my late 20s. But I became very introverted, very quiet. I was always scorned with the nickname of Smiler, simply because I never did. And from a very early age, I became very morose, very depressed, and quite a quiet child, shall we say.
You see, I was smothered in love by my mum and dad. My dad's dead now. And I don't think I could have got through life without my dad. I don't think I could get through life without my mum.
I mean, most people are very lucky. I mean, obviously, everyone has problems, but most parents, most families love and support each other. I wasn't in that situation. And I know several other people grow up day by day in the same situation. I was lucky because I'm a strong person, I'm intelligent, and I'm very, very stubborn. But there were times when I didn't know if I was going to get through it or not, but I'm lucky that I survived. So other people aren't so lucky.
For example, in some of those pivotal times that we have as children, let's go through them. Christmas. What was Christmas like in your house?
I'm not going to pretend that I wasn't bought presents, because I was, but I do remember being forced to wear a blue jumper, which I found incredibly uncomfortable. It was incredibly itchy and nasty against my skin. I've got sensitive skin. And I was forced to wear this, being in pain, for the so-called Christmas photograph. I wasn't allowed as a child to be vegetarian, even though I knew I wanted to be. From the age of 4 or 5, I wanted to be vegetarian, but I wasn't permitted to be so. And yes, I was bought presents, but it wasn't a happy occasion.
And when you would need to lean on your mum and dad when something happened in school, or I don't know.
That was never an option. I was bullied incessantly at school. I was beaten up. I was literally just left on my own. There was nobody I could turn to.
How young were you when your parents noticed your sexuality?
Well, I mean, I knew from about the age of 8 or 9. I was certain by the time I was 9. My parents, especially my mother, certainly wasn't going to have any truck with such things. It was never going to be an option. I mean, I knew who I was from a very early age. Whether they knew or not, I don't know. There was no personal relationship there. We never talked.
Now, I'm going to show my ignorance here, but I would have presumed that 9 years of age, you know, puberty hasn't kicked in, that none of us know what we are.
Oh, I think...
How did you know?
A lot of gay men know from a very early age. I mean, I was very self-aware, I knew. One of the things that actually tipped it for me and made me realise who I was, I think about the age of 7 or 8, we were taking a long car trip and I was listening to a song by Nick Kershaw, and the chorus contained the word boy over and over again, and I had to keep listening to this song because I knew the word boy was important to me. And it made me feel safe and warm for some reason. And I suddenly realised, yes, that's because that's who I'm attracted to, that's who I like. I knew who I was from an early age, and I think a lot of gay men do.
And were you ever tempted to tell your parents?
No, because even my school environment, because I had no friends, there was nobody I could really talk to. There was one guy at school, a lad called Justin, and him and I got on okay. We just walked home together, but that was the closest I had to a friend. And he asked me one day when we were 12 or 13, and I just instantly changed the subject. Because I'd been brought up in an environment where I was told that being gay was nothing to be discussed, was disgusting, and was really utterly abhorrent and shouldn't be discussed at all, how could I come to terms with who I was?
Why did you get bullied in school?
Obviously, kids know, kids understand, but I was the classic school loner. I was all by myself. I didn't talk to anybody. I just sat in the corner and tried not to attract attention. The problem was, of course, I was an overachiever. I was quite athletic. I did quite well in sports. I was always one of the top in the exams, and because of that, that made me a target as well. So you've got this young kid who's pretty good athletically, very good academically, but has no friends and just sits in a corner quietly. Kids don't need an excuse to have a target.
And the teachers didn't protect you?
Not in the slightest.
You see, all of what you've told me so far has got to screw most people up in their mind, in their head, so much that they could barely function.
As I said, I'm very stubborn. I had a very rough first 20 years of my life. I mean, what sort of kid, just after his 17th birthday, takes the decision that the only option he has is to go and sleep on the streets with no possessions, no money, and not even a coat to his name?
Because they were beating you in your house, weren't they?
There was some physical violence, but not that much, because from the age of about 14, I was physically imposing enough to present a threat to them.
So that's what you were running away from?
Absolutely, yes.
At 17?
At 17. It was March 1987, and I just had to get out of there.
So you're on away from home at 17.
Mm-hmm.
I remember how vulnerable, naive I was at 17.
Yep.
And you're out in the streets and you're sleeping rough.
Yep, with just a T-shirt, jeans and shoes to my name and nothing else.
How did you survive?
Well, the first night I walked in a thunderstorm 15 miles to the house of a guy I knew from college, and I stayed at his place for that night, and then the next day he took me into town, which was central Rotherham in Yorkshire, and tried to help me find a hostel somewhere. And I went to this hostel, and it was so unpleasant and nasty, I simply couldn't stay there. So I spent the next few weeks sleeping rough in a park in central Rotherham. I begged, I shoplifted, I had to do what I could to survive.
And then you turned to prostitution?
Yep. I found myself in London. I just had to get out of Yorkshire because this was the place that was so associated with pain and agony for me. So I decided to try my luck, such as it was, in London. And I went down to London, and this was still in the later years of the Thatcher government, where homeless people were treated simply as vermin. But there I was in central London, cold, scared, a young lad essentially, with no idea how I was going to eat or survive. And somebody told me about a brothel in South Kensington. I went along there and basically asked for a job. Now, don't forget, I was 17 at the time, which was still 4 years younger than the age of consent when I was there. So I was breaking the law. Anybody who happened to be my client was breaking the law, but I had to survive. There was no other way that I was going to survive each night.
I've often asked women this question. I don't think I've asked a man. But what does it do to your soul when you're selling your body for sex like that?
I'm not going to pretend that it was a soul-destroying experience, because it wasn't, because I was able to separate myself. This was a business transaction with one sole aim. This wasn't a career choice. This wasn't something I was doing out of fun. This wasn't something I was doing because I wanted to. I was doing it because I had to. If I wanted to eat that day, if I wanted the chance of anywhere to sleep for the night, which wasn't a doorway or wasn't a cold concrete floor, this is what I had to do.
And what did you think of the people who were buying you?
To some degree, I was actually grateful, because these were the people, they saw something in me. I mean, maybe they saw something in me which was pleasant or nice, and they were willing to pay for my company. But then again, I was still only 18, and that could have been a major factor. But then again, there were other boys working there who were a couple of years older but looked even younger. So to some degree, I was grateful. I'm not going to pretend...
Grateful to sexual predators?
Well, they were paying me. Without them, I would have starved. Without them, I would have been reduced to even more drastic circumstances.
CJ, they were using you?
Quite possibly, but I'm not going to pretend. If I was that concerned about it, I wouldn't have done it.
You had no choice.
I had to live.
Yeah, so you had no choice.
Yeah.
So these men
mm-hmm.
were using a young, vulnerable boy
yep.
for sex.
Absolutely right. Yeah.
And you were grateful.
I can't pretend that I wasn't, because this was whatever I had to do, and it was my decision to do it. Nobody was forcing me to do it. It was my decision. I take full responsibility. I wanted to eat. I wanted to live. I wanted to see the next morning. I was not embarrassed about what choices I made.
I'm not suggesting you should be embarrassed. I guess I'm suggesting that you should take a bit of pressure off yourself, that it was your choice. You had no choice.
No, I had...
It's very easy for people to frown at people who prostitute themselves if they're sitting in a warm home with a roof over their head.
Absolutely right. I mean, most of us, we probably don't want to think about it, but most of us are only two or three paychecks away from serious financial worries. And homelessness can happen to anybody. That's why I campaign against it now. I know what it's like. I slept on the streets for nearly 3 years. I was cold, I was frightened, I was hungry. there was a constant threat of violence. You never know what's going to happen. You never know where your next meal is coming from.
How did you get out of that?
It was in Cologne. Absolute pure luck. Right place at the right time. I was begging outside a bar in central Cologne, and an older man in his 50s came up to me and asked me one of those classic questions, "Excuse me, have you ever thought about modelling?" And I thought, oh dear, really? Is that the best you can manage? Well, at least I know where it's going to go, and hey, at least it's a bed for the night. But as it happens, he was entirely genuine. And he gave me a 100-mark note and said, look, this was a Friday night, and he said, I have an office in Dusseldorf. If you're interested, come along on Monday morning. If you don't want to, keep the money and the best of luck to you. So I made it through the weekend, and on the Monday morning, I turned up at his office in Dusseldorf, and I stayed with his agency for 4.5 years.
Wow. Wow.
The absolute just
one encounter
blind luck.
On the street.
Yeah, just one encounter. He just came up to me while I was begging outside a bar.
So you became a model?
Yep, I was a model for 4.5 years, based in Dusseldorf. I lived in Cologne. And it was, actually, that was quite an enjoyable time. It was still very difficult because it was a very transient lifestyle. You never kept the same people around you for more than a few weeks, so you weren't making friends. But essentially, I was being paid to walk up and down wearing nice clothes, and accommodation was provided. What more could a guy who's just turned 20 want?
Pair that to the kid lying on a park bench.
Absolutely. I mean, frankly, whatever I'd been offered, I would have been very grateful and taken it. But this was beyond the dreams of serendipity. I could never have imagined something like this would happen.
And from there, that's how you started to rebuild your life then?
Yeah, I mean, once I'd got into that situation, it was here my life starts. I mean, I was 20 years old and my life begins. I'd been through so much, and Amsterdam was a particularly traumatic time as well. But once I'd got to Cologne and stayed there and lived there, my life was not back on track, because I'm not going to say that, but my life began. I count my life as starting at the age of 20. The first 20 years of my life, I try not to count as me.
And finally, for a boy who was so unloved in his childhood, have you got someone to love you now?
I have. I've been with my other half, Andrew, for 18 years. We had our civil partnership back in 2008, and next month we're actually converting that to full marriage. So when I started selling my body, I was 4 years under the age of consent in this country. Now we have marriage equality, and for me that's important. And I'm going to take full advantage of that, and on the 26th of October, I will be a married man.
Yours is a story of survival. You're one of the strongest people I've spoken to in a long, long time.
Thank you, Stephen.
And thank you so much for sharing your story with me.